we present Brian Thompson's adaptation of The Younger Generation by Stanley Horton.
Clock, Jim. You've been asleep.
Oh, yes. Good heavens, Alice, it's after 10:30. Are the boys in yet?
No, dear. If they'd come in, I would have woken you. A letter's been delivered.
Letter?
By hand. It's on the sideboard.
Huh?
No, there, dear. Against the plant.
Ah, it's the same handwriting as the other letters.
Yes. I ought to know it. I've seen it somewhere.
There's no doubt it's a man's.
Don't you think we ought to open it, James?
Oh, no. We'd better not do that.
Well, what shall you do, then?
I shall ask Grace to show it to me.
Suppose she refuses?
Well, then I shall make her show it to me.
Well, if you're going to make her show it to you, you might just as well open it yourself.
Well, that wouldn't be quite honourable, Alice. I would never think of opening Grace's letters unless...
Unless?
Unless she refused to show them to me.
And what then?
At last. Now then... Your mother's been anxious.
Well, Reggie, did you win?
Win? I should jolly well think so. Walk round them.
Where's Arthur?
Oh, I don't know.
Haven't you seen him?
No, he's been playing for the second at home. I've been playing at Liverpool.
You're very late.
Oh, hang it all, Dad. It's only just 10:00.
It is 10:30, Reggie.
Well, I've had to come from Liverpool.
It doesn't take 5 hours to come from Liverpool.
Well, I had to get something to eat, hadn't I?
All right, my boy, I'm not going to argue about it. You're old enough to be trusted, but you know I don't like you to be out too late on Saturday night. I can't make out where Arthur is.
So you had something to eat in Liverpool, Reggie. Where did you go?
To a place.
I don't know why you couldn't have come straight home. I could have kept your tea for you.
Did any of the fellows go with you?
Only Jones, our left back. He was captain today.
Did you go to a confectioner's?
No.
I could have told you a very nice confectioner's.
A restaurant.
Whereabouts?
Oh, can't say. I don't know Liverpool.
What name?
Oh, I forget. Jones knew it.
A teetotal place?
Oh, I really don't know. Well, what on earth does it matter?
Oh, Reggie, don't be so bad-tempered when people ask you questions.
Well, you're always bothering me about what I've been doing and where I've been. Anyone would think there was something wrong in having tea in Liverpool.
Writing is that, Reggie? On the letter there.
Clifford Rawson's, isn't it? I say, Dad, I wanted to ask you something.
Well, my boy?
Don't you think I might chuck being secretary of the Sunday school now?
Reggie!
You want to give up the secretaryship? What for? Do you find the work too hard?
No, but it spoils a Sunday afternoon.
You couldn't be better employed on a Sunday afternoon.
Well, of course, that's a matter of opinion.
Reggie, if you give up the Sunday school, I shall be very grieved.
Oh, it's enough to make a fellow want to emigrate.
Oh, gracious, Reggie.
I wish I could go to Canada like Tommy Leslie.
He went because he could do no good here.
And he travelled steerage.
I had a picture postcard from him last week showing him milking a cow.
If you want to milk cows, there's no need to go to Canada.
He's out in the fields at 5:00 every morning.
Well, that wouldn't suit you. I've hard work to get you up by 8:30.
Oh, rot. It's fine. It's a man's life. Then I've got to keep on at the Sunday school.
You know perfectly well I don't wish you to give it up.
Oh, I shall write and ask Tommy Leslie if he can get me a job in Canada. I shall.
Oh,
yeah.
Reggie.
Oh, sorry.
You've upset a cup. You'll have to drink from that one.
I don't want any coffee.
What's the matter with him?
He's feeling restricted, and he's very bad-tempered.
I can't see why. Is Arthur in?
Not yet.
Put the tray down, Grace. I want to talk to you. We both want to talk to you.
If it's about Reggie and Arthur, I don't think there's much I can say.
It's not about your brothers, Grace. A letter has come for you. Here. Take it.
Thank you.
Who is it from, dear?
From Miss Baker. About the bazaar, I expect.
Grace. That letter is not from Miss Baker.
Father!
You know it's not, don't you? Come, Grace. Grace, will you show me that letter?
I don't think you've any right to insist on seeing my letters, Father.
I am not insisting, Grace. I am asking you to allow me.
I'm 22, Father.
Are you ashamed to show it to me?
I'm certainly not ashamed.
Thank you. Remember, I'm opening this with your permission, Grace. Darling Grace, just a line to tell you that I'm not going away for the weekend after all, so I will meet you after Sunday school as usual. Dearest love, your own Clifford.
Can I have my letter, please?
It is from Clifford Rawson, I suppose.
Yes.
Now, will you tell me, your mother and me, how it is that Clifford Rawson comes to be writing a letter like that to you?
He wanted to let me know that he'd meet me tomorrow, I suppose.
As usual, he says.
Yes.
He's been meeting you frequently?
Yes.
Why?
Well, Father, if you can't understand, I suppose you used to meet Mother.
I never met your father secretly, Grace, especially after teaching a Sunday school class.
You mean that young Rawson and you are fond of each other?
Yes.
Are you engaged?
No, not exactly. I told Clifford he'd have to ask you first.
I can understand your being fond of young Rawson, though I haven't too good an opinion of him myself, but I cannot understand your meeting him secretly like this, and above all, you're telling me a deliberate lie. A lie? About that letter.
It's entirely your own fault, Father.
My fault?
We had to keep it secret, because you're so strict that you never would let me meet a boy alone. How can you get to know anyone well enough to find out if you want to be engaged to him unless you see a good deal of him first?
You've always had plenty of opportunities of meeting your brother's friends here at home and young men at the tennis club and at the chapel.
That's not quite the same thing, is it?
Then I am to understand that Clifford Rawson wants my consent to your engagement.
Yes.
Very well. I don't promise to give it, you understand. I shall have to think about it and talk it over with your mother. And I must speak to Arthur about Clifford. I must know a great deal more about him than I do at present.
You must see him at once, James.
Well, certainly. I shall write tonight and ask him to come and see me tomorrow.
Will you let me write and ask him, Father?
You? Yes, very well, if you prefer.
I do. What time tomorrow?
In the afternoon.
I'll write at once.
James, who would have believed it?
I'm sorry to find out that Grace has been deceiving us. But we must be very thankful it's no worse. I shall ask Arthur. He's a friend of Clifford's.
Yes, the great thing is to find out whether he's steady. I have heard he comes home very late sometimes.
Aha! Caught you napping.
Tom. My goodness gracious, it's Tom.
Tom, well, this is a surprise.
Yes, I meant it to be. I had to come across from Germany on business, and I wasn't sure whether I'd have time to get down here to see you, so I didn't write. But here I am.
It's 5 years, Tom, since we saw you last.
Yes, time flies, doesn't it?
It's too bad of you not to come over oftener. It isn't very far from Hamburg to here.
Well, it's no further from here to Hamburg. Why don't you come and see me, Jim, you lazy beggar?
Well, I've been intending to for years, but...
And how are you all, eh?
Splendid.
Children?
Oh, they're grown up, you forget.
By gad, so they are.
There's only Reggie still under 21. And you'd never guess it from his behaviour.
You'd like a bit of supper, Tom, I dare say.
No, thanks. I have dinner in the train.
Coffee, then?
If it's not troubling you.
No, it's ready here. You always enjoy a cup of coffee in the evening.
And what will you smoke, Tom?
I'll try some of your tobacco, Jim, thanks.
Do you like a feather mattress?
What for?
Well, to sleep on, of course. I must go and see about your room.
Oh, don't you trouble. Sleep in the bath if necessary.
It's not necessary. We have a spare bedroom.
Well, how's Mother? I'd like to go round tonight and see her for a few minutes if it's not too late.
Well, she never goes to bed until 11. Wonderful old woman, Tom.
She writes to me regularly, once a month. There's always a bit about you and a bit about herself and a good deal about the chapel.
She goes to service morning and evening on Sundays. She even kept up her Bible class till last year.
Amazing. Still, I can't help feeling that she seems to regard the chapel as the hub of the universe.
It is the principal interest in her life.
Curious how one gets rid of that point of view. Living abroad, I mean.
Yes, that was Mother's chief objection to your going abroad at all, do you remember?
Rather. Even now, I suspect she thinks of Germany as an ungodly place inhabited by rather light-minded people.
Well, Tom, you know, we can't exactly approve of the way they spend Sunday in Germany.
Oh, the continental Sunday, eh?
I think the English way is best, Tom.
Yes, yes. And you think old England's the finest country in the world and that Salchester's the most beautiful city in England and the chapel is the noblest institution in Salchester?
Well, Tom, if I do...
Oh, that... don't apologize for it. It's the spirit that's made England what it is.
Do you really think so?
I do. And thank God I haven't got it.
Father, I want... How do you do?
Uncle Tom.
Hello, young man. It's Arthur, isn't it?
No, I'm Reggie.
Oh, Reggie, of course. And where is Arthur?
Not come in yet.
I can't make out where he's got to. It's so late.
Late? Why, it isn't 11 yet. Your hotels and places don't close till 11, do they?
Hotels? Why?
Oh, thought he might be having a drink somewhere, that's all.
I should be very sorry to think that either Arthur or Reggie was in the habit of frequenting hotels.
Why, what's wrong with them?
Wrong with them? Yeah. Wrong with hotels? Well, I suppose there's nothing wrong with them if they're properly conducted, but you forget that Arthur and Reggie are only boys.
I say, Father, I shall be 21 in less than 2 years.
In a bank, aren't you, Reggie?
Yes.
And Arthur's still with you at the warehouse, Jim?
Yes.
Oh, how do you like the bank, Reggie?
Rotten.
How's that?
Oh, there's no romance about it.
After all, there isn't intended to be.
Well, what I want is a man's life.
What do you call a man's life?
Oh, you know, riding round on a horse and ordering people about.
You find it slow at the bank?
Slow's not the word. And what chance has a fellow of getting on?
You've the chance of becoming a bank manager in time.
A bank manager? Now, I ask you, Uncle Tom, what is a bank manager?
A man who manages a bank, I suppose.
Well, I mean, what sort of a man? Why, a fat, bald old beggar with side whiskers. A chap who couldn't kill a grizzly bear to save his life, couldn't run away from one even. Oh, I tell you, I'm sick of Salchester. You don't think you could find me a place in Hamburg, Uncle?
I'm afraid even Hamburg wouldn't be exciting enough to suit your requirements.
Tom, here's Grace.
We met in the hall. How do you do, my dear? Are you too big to kiss?
No, Uncle. How jolly of you to turn up like this.
Not engaged yet, I see, little Grace.
No.
You must hurry up, my dear.
I know. Oh, Father, I've sent that letter to the post.
Very well, so be it.
Jim, dear, Mr. Leadbitter and Mr. Fowle would like to have a word with you, if it isn't too late.
Leadbitter and Fowle?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, everybody at once. Ask them to come in.
Look here, I'll slip round to see Mother now.
Very well, but she's moved, you know. How will you know the house?
Reggie and I will go with you, Uncle, to show you the way.
Right you are.
But you
no,
can't...
No, don't think of it, Jim. Entertain your guests.
May we enter? Good evening, James.
I hope we don't intrude so late.
Not at all.
Let me introduce my brother from Germany. Mr. Thomas Kenyon, Mr. Leadbitter, and Mr. Fowle.
I'm very pleased to meet you, sir.
Tom Kenyon? Oh, I remember giving you a black eye when we were at the grammar school together.
I think it was I who gave you the black eye.
Was it? Perhaps you're right, I forget.
We just wanted to have a word with you, Kenyon.
I'm off. Come along, Grace, Reggie.
Oh, we're not driving you away.
No, not at all. Going round to my mother's. We shall be back before you've gone, I dare say.
I'll see you out.
Well, gentlemen, sit down.
Yes.
Cigar, Leadbitter?
Oh, thanks.
Yes, I don't mind if I do.
You're a teetotaler?
Entirely.
I keep a little for my friends, Fowle.
That's the right spirit.
Help yourself, Fowle.
Yes, I don't mind if I do.
Where is young Arthur?
He's not come in yet.
Oh, you shall see the time my lad Alan comes home. 1 or 2 in the morning sometimes. I pretend not to notice anything, but of course I've a pretty good idea what he's been up to.
But you allow it?
Well, boys will be boys. Besides, I've been young myself.
Well, surely it's a father's duty to...
To keep his eyes shut.
I hold stricter views.
Of course you do, my dear Kenyon. So do I. Your views are unimpeachable. And it's for that reason that you find us here tonight.
I don't understand.
You are probably surprised to see us at this unearthly hour. We are on our way home from a meeting of the Council of the Liberal Association, where a decision has been arrived at that Fowle and I thought it advisable to acquaint you with immediately.
Admirably put, old chap, but a little formal. Kenyon isn't a public meeting, you know.
Very well. Ask him yourself, then.
To cut matters short, we want to adopt you as Liberal candidate for Longton Park Ward at the City Council elections in November.
Me? Gentlemen, my dear Leadbitter, my dear Fowle, I'm overwhelmed.
Never mind that. Will you stand?
Will I stand? Oh, upon my word, I don't know what to say. I shall have to think about it, to talk it over with my wife. But believe me, I appreciate the honour immensely.
We should like to have your decision not later than Monday evening.
But why do you ask me? To win the seat from that fellow Grignall, we shall need a very strong man indeed.
We are of opinion that you are a strong man, Kenyon.
You see, it's like this. The nonconformist element is damn powerful in the ward. Now, you're a big gun at your chapel, and that'll rake in a lot of votes. I'm a churchman myself, but I see that without the nonconformist vote, the Liberal Party here would be in the soup. Then Grignall's a brewer and you're teetotaler. If we work it properly, temperance reform and social purity and all that game, we shall detach some of the temperance conservatives.
Are there any temperance conservatives?
In municipal elections, yes. Not in parliamentary elections.
Down with the publican. Down with the brewer. That's the line we want to take. Good health.
Emphasize the fact that drunkenness is the cause of poverty.
But wouldn't some people say that poverty is the cause of drunkenness?
We can afford to ignore them. It's only socialists who say that.
Besides, hang it all, what does it matter what we say? Between ourselves, we were all friends here. What we care about is knocking Grignall out, not about reforming social conditions.
I don't altogether agree with you, Fowl.
I don't agree with you at all. I do care about improving the conditions of the poor and helping them to keep out of temptation. If I'm to be your candidate, that must be understood.
By all means.
Well, all the better. I mean, if you're so much in earnest, you'll be all the stronger as a candidate. There's no harm at all in meaning what you say. No harm at all.
The people who don't mean what they say are the bane of politics.
Now, don't be so sweeping, Ledbetter. I think it's a damn good wheeze putting you up, Kenyon. You're not too intellectual like Ledbetter here. You're the sort of honest, straightforward man that electors take to at meetings. It's my own idea. You've got me to thank for it. Good health.
I'm very much obliged to you. And Ledbetter, and all of you. If I accept your invitation...
Oh, you've got to.
Well, I don't think there's much doubt. You may rely on my putting up the best fight I can for you.
I'm sure you will.
Good luck to Councillor Kenyon.
Tom and the children are back, dear. What did you say, Mr. Fowle?
They want me to stand for the City Council, my dear.
Oh, James, how splendid. You will, won't you?
There you are, Kenyon. She's settled it for you.
I don't see why not.
Hello, what's the excitement?
Tom, what do you think?
Hush, Alice, please.
No, I must tell them. James is going to put up for the council.
Bravo!
Hooray! You mustn't go just yet, you two. Sit down again.
It is late.
Oh, never mind. Once in a way, I'm elated.
Of course. What about music in the parks on Sunday, eh? No voting against that, I hope.
I defend music in the parks. It keeps people out of the public houses.
Well, you might say that of bullfighting or football.
Oh, I don't see why there shouldn't be Sunday football.
There are many things you don't see yet, my son.
But fancy you a councillor, James.
No, it may not stop at that.
Alderman? Lord Mayor?
A knighthood.
And you'd be Lady Mayoress, Mrs. Kenyon.
Oh, so I should.
And that may not be the end of it. Member of Parliament, perhaps.
James.
A cabinet, a peerage, eh? Think of Chamberlain.
I say... Aren't you all a little previous? Father may not be elected at all.
Of course. We're all talking nonsense, we know that. But it's very pleasant to be sitting here round the fire talking nonsense for once in a way.
Wait till you're in the council, Jim. You'll be able to talk it as much as you like.
No, Tom. I shall take my duties seriously. I must. Duties, responsibilities, temperate policies, an end to this madcap rush and smother of the new things, the headlong... Now, what the devil was that?
Mr. Arthur, is it you?
No, Maggie. It's Genghis Khan. Who broke that priceless object?
Good heavens, you're bottled. You broke it.
Come here, Maggie.
Mr. Arthur, your mother and father are just behind that door and they'll be out in a minute. Here, now you just stop that.
Maggie. Oh, what's placed this impediment to my unbridled lust?
Oh, you wicked man. You... Mr. Arthur, take your hands off. You dear God, the master will catch you. And they've just told him he's about to be made a peer of the realm.
Oh, you were listening at the door, were you?
It isn't funny.
Just one little kiss.
You're a wicked boy.
Oh, I was a wicked man a moment ago.
Well, you kiss like a boy. Now, let me go.
I love you, Maggie.
For shame, Mr. Arthur. That's not funny.
If Father is to be made a peer of the realm, I shall be a lord at least, and you will be my lady.
Ugh.
What's the matter?
Oh, you're drunk. You smell something awful, and you've no right to go insulting me.
Oh, Mags.
Oh, come on, help me clear this up. And be quick. There's been enough nonsense. Oh, now they're ringing for me. Sweet heavens, man, get away from that door.
I'm going to hide under the coat rack, and then I'll spring out and bite your box. No, Maggie, no offense.
You wait there, and don't you even breathe until I come back.
Oh, Maggie, you're an angel. If I even so much as dream that you have, legs under that skirt again, I'll enter a monastery, I swear it. I have drunk of the good red wine. Matter of fact, I've drunk of the lot. And I'm here, cowering under the coats, and I defy anybody to go.
What have you done now? The upstand. Yeah. Here, come out at once.
This house is not in sympathy with red-blooded Englishness such as made our country great. Maggie.
No. Here, if my old mother could see you, she'd brain you.
What?
Oh, nothing. Pull yourself together. You're to go in. They know you're here. And Mr. Arthur.
Yes?
Oh, you silly baby. Come on, let go of me now. Here, pull your tie straight. And try to look as if you belong to this planet.
Is the old man in a good mood?
That's not for me to say. Are you going to wear my apron to go in?
No.
Then leave hold of it. There. Now then, brace up, and they'll never notice.
Right.
So it isn't a question of intolerance, but a finer sort of judgment, which, as a father and a householder...
I say, that's absolutely brilliant, Kenyon.
I haven't finished, Fowl.
Oh, I thought you had. Anyway, never mind.
Never mind. But I do. It's too easy to criticize a position based on principles.
I'm sure you have no detractors, James.
They see my position as stuffy, straight-laced, holier-than-thou, moralistic.
I'm sure they do, really.
Which I am not. Who the devil is that scratching at the door? Come in, will you?
Is the door locked? The handle appears to be turning.
Will you come in, whoever is there?
Knock, knock.
It may be Arthur.
Arthur?
Lord, Arthur!
Good gracious.
Arthur, will you kindly come in with us?
Certainly. Straight away, immediately.
Sunderall! This is the heir to the Kenyon Millions. Mother, father, what a pleasant and unusual surprise.
Arthur, you are wearing Maggie's cap.
I am. Correct. I shall now take it off with a bold sweep.
Watch out, sir!
Who's placed this impediment to my gallantry? Was it you, Mr. Leadbitter? Come on now. Answer. Who put that miserable piece of china in my reckless path?
Arthur, you are... Will you stand still, sir?
No, forgive me, but will you stand still, sir? Mr. Leadbitter, will you assist my father to stand still while I'm talking to him?
I believe he's caught the influenza.
Is that what they call it now? It has brought him to his knees, at any rate.
Oh, the room is going decidedly queer. I think I'm going to...
Look out! It's the most virulent case of influenza I've ever witnessed, Kenyon.
I am grateful to you for your sympathy. Most grateful, indeed.
Must you bang that gong, Maggie?
I'm sorry, sir. Breakfast is ready, sir.
I know breakfast is ready. I'm asking you not to bang the gong.
I've stopped, sir.
Maggie, I believe you let Mr. Arthur in last night.
Yes, sir.
Before the plant pot fell over... Did Mr. Arthur... I understand, Mr. Arthur...
Good morning, Father.
Good morning, Grace.
I'll fetch in the tray, sir. How's Mother?
Had rather a bad night. She isn't coming down for breakfast.
Oh.
No, she's still too upset to come down. Will you let Maggie take breakfast to her room? See to it yourself, dear. See that it's rather nice.
I'll go now and speak to Cook.
Just pour out my coffee, Maggie.
Yes, sir.
Maggie... I should like to tell you how sorry I am for what happened last night.
What happened last night?
For what Mr. Arthur did.
What Mr. Arthur did, sir?
Come, Maggie. What did Mr. Arthur do?
Oh, nothing, sir.
Nothing?
Well, nothing to speak of.
He wasn't doing anything?
Well, of course, he was trying to kiss me, sir.
That is what I thought. Maggie, I am deeply shocked. It is the first time a woman has ever been insulted under my roof. I will see that Mr. Arthur apologizes to you at once.
Oh, sir, I shouldn't like him to do that.
Well, no self-respecting girl could be content with anything else.
Oh, you see, sir, Mr. Arthur was a little jolly last night, and after all, he only offered to kiss me.
Well, goodness gracious, isn't that bad enough?
Oh, believe me, sir, I don't mind it at all.
Don't mind it, but you've got to mind it, girl.
Oh, I'd much rather you let it rest, sir.
Well, not on any account. It's a matter of principle with me. Mr. Arthur has got to apologize to you before everybody.
I couldn't listen to him, sir.
But I shall insist on your listening.
Oh, sir, don't humiliate me before everybody.
Don't you see, girl, that you have been humiliated before everybody, and that's why I insist upon this apology having the same publicity.
No, sir.
Don't argue with me about it, Maggie. I am your master, and you will have to do what I tell you.
I'd rather leave first, sir.
Oh, don't talk nonsense. Well,
I don't mind being kissed by anyone, even by you, sir. But when it comes to being apologized to before everybody, just as if I'd done something wrong, well, I'd rather give you notice now, sir.
Very well, give me notice, then. Tell Miss Grace her breakfast's getting cold.
Yes, sir.
Cook is looking after Mother's breakfast. What's the matter, Maggie?
Nothing, ma'am.
Maggie has just given me notice.
Maggie? Oh, after last night, I suppose.
No, not exactly. She prefers to go rather than receive a public apology from Arthur.
But if she doesn't want an apology...
I want her to have one. Not so much for her sake, mind, as Arthur's. It will be good discipline for him.
Did you say anything to Arthur last night?
Oh, I found it impossible last night. At first he persisted in trying to shake hands with me, and after that he became violently ill. I'm very much upset about this, Grace. Mm. I've been awake most of the night thinking it over. I'm thankful your grandmother wasn't here. I think it would have killed her. The most unfortunate part of the whole business was Leadbitter and Fowle seeing it all.
I don't suppose Mr. Fowle would be very shocked. He's used to that sort of thing with his son, Alan.
But that's just it. I'd let Fowle see distinctly what I thought of his way of managing his boy. And then on top of that, Arthur comes in here in this condition. Disgusting. Then, of course, there was Mr. Leadbitter. He must have been terribly shocked. A very strong teetotaler.
Well, it can't be helped now, Father. After all, it doesn't matter as much as it would if they went to the chapel.
Oh, but don't you see, Grace? They've asked me to stand for the council just because of my views on the drink question. And now, after that, it's most ignominious.
I dare say they'll keep quiet about it.
That doesn't alter the fact that I cannot command their respect as I did. What do you think Fowle had the impertinence to say just as he was going? He dug me in the ribs and said, "Never mind, old chap, you'll soon get used to it," and I couldn't even answer him back.
Have some more coffee, Father.
No, thank you. Then, of course, Grace, you must understand this business makes it awkward for me to meet Clifford Rawson this afternoon. I wish he weren't coming today.
Why?
Because I intended to talk to Arthur about him, you see, to ask him if Clifford is steady. Now, of course, I should not be inclined to place much reliance on Arthur's opinion.
It's very unfair of you to mix Clifford up with this.
Oh, I'm not doing so, my dear. Though, now I come to think of it, I shouldn't be surprised if Clifford had been mixed up in it.
Father!
He's a great friend of Arthur's. I shall certainly ask Clifford what he was doing last night.
It's very unkind of you to be so prejudiced against him.
If he is innocent, he will have no difficulty in telling me what he was doing. I am not going to let you be engaged to him until I have made the fullest inquiries. It's not surprising that I should be suspicious. And I find out that my own three children have been deceiving me.
I thought you weren't going to say any more about that, Father.
No, I won't. But there's Arthur as well, and now I may inform you, Reggie.
What has Reggie been doing?
You will know in good time. That's enough, Maggie!
I expect they're all asleep.
You'd better have this bacon sent out to keep warm for your uncle. By the way, you won't be going to Sunday school this afternoon, Grace, if Clifford is coming.
I think not.
No, better not.
Morning, everybody. Oh, I say, this bacon's cold.
That's your fault, Reggie.
I'll have some tongue.
You rang, miss. Take the bacon and eggs and keep it warm till I ring again, Maggie.
You're very late, son.
The gong's only just gone.
For the second time.
Oh, I didn't hear it. I'm jolly hungry.
Didn't you have a good meal last night at that teetotal restaurant that you've forgotten the name of?
Yes. Oh, pretty fair.
After I locked up last night, I found a paper on the hall floor underneath the peg on which your overcoat was hung up. It had evidently fallen out of the pocket. It was a bill with the heading Hornet Hotel, Liverpool. I have it here. I'll read it. 2 sherry and bitters, 1 shilling. 2 table d'hote dinners at 1/2 crown, 5 shillings. 1 flask of Chianti, number 74, 3 6. Coffees, 8. Liqueurs, 1 shilling. Cigars, 1 shilling. Total for 2 persons, 12 shillings and 2d.
I don't see that you ought to read my private papers.
It is yours, then. Now, I ask you, whether you don't consider it an extravagance to pay, how much? 12 shillings and tuppence.
More.
More?
I gave the waiter a bob.
Gave the waiter a bob. Of course, in your position you would do. 13 and tuppence for a meal for two persons. 6 and 7 pence each.
It's not out of the way for dinner.
You could have got a very good meat tea for a shilling.
I don't like meat teas.
You're accustomed to them at home.
I've never noticed you hanging back.
Oh, I dare say. But that's no reason why I should go looking for them when I'm away, is it?
I don't know what the younger generation is coming to. Do you know that the money you two boys spent on one dinner would have kept a working man and his family for a whole week?
Well, I dare say the money some people spend on one dinner would keep a working man and his family for a whole year.
But it's not so much the extravagance. It's that you should deliberately go to an hotel and drink wine. Wine. A boy of your age, and worst of all, that you must come home and lie about it.
But you are so unreasonable. It's better to keep some things from you.
Be quiet, sir. Grace tells me an untruth, then you come in and do the same. The only good thing about Arthur's affair is that he didn't tell a lie about it.
Well, that wasn't his fault. He wasn't in a position to. There's no knowing what he'd have done if he'd been sober.
I am hoping that this wretched business of Arthur's may be a lesson to you. That is why I'm not going to say much more. You are approaching the critical years of your life, when you will form habits and friendships that will determine what sort of a man you will be. I pray that you will grow up a good man, Reggie. A Christian man. And it is my duty to watch over you to the best of my ability. I despair.
Oh, I do wish Father wouldn't pray over me. It's taking a mean advantage of a fellow. I can't answer him back like I can when he's angry.
I suppose it makes you feel ashamed of yourself.
Oh, all right. And you needn't take up such a high and mighty attitude. I suppose he's caught you messing around with Clifford Rawson.
Will you please mind your own business, Reggie?
I'm not blaming you. We're all in the same boat, it seems. We've simply got to tell fibs to Father because he thinks that we're always trying to do something wrong. Well, he's got it into his head that we want to bolt down the broad road that leads to destruction, and he spends his time dragging us back into the narrow path. Oh, as if a man can't have a little dinner with a pal without all this fuss. Strikes me the narrow path for people with narrow minds.
At least Arthur and I are grown up.
Oh, thank you. Mm. Well, you wait till I'm 21. I'll show you how to manage Father then. In a way, I rather admire Arthur for breaking out like this. Though, of course, he was a fool to come home while he was in that state. I mean, he ought to have gone for a long walk. I know I should. He's, not talked to Arthur yet?
No.
Saving it up, I suppose. And he thinks it's more Christian to be angry in cold blood. Personally, I think it shows a nasty spirit.
Hello, you two.
Arthur.
Oh, it's all right. Father's not here.
Breakfast ready yet, Grace?
It was ready about 2 hours ago.
There's some bacon and eggs in the kitchen.
Oh, bacon and eggs.
What you want is a brandy and soda, old chap.
Yeah, is Father up yet?
Yes, long ago. And not in a very good temper. Maggie has just given him notice to leave.
Oh, Maggie?
Because of what took place between her and Arthur last night.
No, because of what took place between her and Father this morning.
I say, what's he been up to?
To be absurd. He says Arthur has got to apologise to her before everyone, and she doesn't want him to.
Well, I don't mind apologising to Maggie if I behave like a cad, but I'm not going to have it made into a public ceremony.
Well, you shouldn't have made a public ceremony of kissing her, then. You might have waited until Uncle Tom had gone.
What? Was Uncle Tom here?
Well, didn't you notice a stranger?
Well, I thought I saw several. Was it only Uncle Tom?
No, you were not deceived. There were others. You chose a night when there was quite a nice little reception on.
Oh, who were they?
Mr. Leadbitter and Mr. Fowle come to ask Father to put up for the city council.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, there'll be a holy row. I wonder what Father will say to you.
I'm thinking about what I shall say to him.
Well, shouldn't say anything. You'll only make things worse. Besides, he won't let you get a word in edgeways. He's too fond of talking. I expect he'll pray over you.
He'll have to listen to me. I'm going to have some alterations in this house. That affair last night was only the beginning.
Do you mean you're going to get drunk every night?
Oh, don't talk rot. I mean, he's got to treat me differently. I'm going to have more freedom.
Oh. While you're about it, you might put in a word for us, eh, Grace?
We all ought to have more freedom.
I'm going to tell him just that.
Quite right. If things are to go on as they do at present, I shan't stand it. I shall go to Australia.
I thought it was Canada.
No, on second thoughts, Australia. It's further away.
Oh, I'm sorry I'm so shockingly late. Good morning, Grace. Good morning, Reggie. Ah, and this is Arthur, isn't it? I've seen you, but you've not seen me. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, Uncle Tom.
Sit here, Uncle. Ring the bell, Arthur. Do you like tea or coffee?
Tea, if it's all the same to you. I can't get decent tea in Hamburg.
It's getting late. I must go and shave.
Will you make some tea quickly, Maggie?
I've bought you some, miss. I thought the coffee would be cold.
That's right. It is.
I'll help myself. There's not much time to lose. I suppose you're all off to chapel.
Oh, yes. You'll come too.
I suppose so.
I must go and get ready, if you'll excuse me. Grandmama will be here soon.
On her way to chapel?
Yes. She always goes with us.
Well, you're feeling better this morning?
Yes, thanks.
You've been having a lively time last night, it appeared.
I suppose you despise me for it.
Not in the least.
What would you say if I told you I'd never been drunk before?
I should be very much surprised.
It's the truth. Why, don't you believe me?
Of course I do, if you say so.
It's the first time in my life I've ever been drunk.
Never mind, it won't be the last.
No, I don't suppose it will. There's a good deal to be said for getting drunk occasionally.
I quite agree with you.
By Jove, you are different from Father.
You don't get on with your father?
No. Well, at least not very well in some things. I should get on all right if he'd only let me alone a bit more.
Do you expect him to have any greater confidence in you after last night?
Oh, good gracious. Father's never stopped me from doing anything I wanted to. I mean, a fellow can find ways to do things, however suspicious his father may be. Only, of course, I'm obliged to do them in an underhand, secret way, and that's what I object to. I don't want to tell lies and deceive Father, but when he thinks it's a deadly sin to drink a glass of beer or go to a music hall, what else can I do?
You can tell him straight out that you intend to have your glass of beer in your music hall.
Oh, well, I can now, but I couldn't before I was 21. It means a row, you know.
Never mind that.
But, of course, I've always tried to spare his feelings and save him worrying himself. I mean, if you'd known I was going to music halls, you'd have thought I was going straight to hell.
Very considerate and thoughtful of you. All the same, have it out with him. It'll do you both good.
I'm going to. That affair of mine last night was a sort of symbol of revolt, throwing down the glove, as it were.
I see. But was there any need to throw it down quite so violently?
Well, perhaps not. But I had my reasons for doing it that way. You know, Uncle Tom, I like you immensely. Surprising how different your views are from Father's.
Oh, we've lived our lives in different places.
Yeah, but you were both brought up together.
Yes, but I soon got away. Your father's lived all his life in Salchester. That's the difference between us.
Why did you leave home?
Couldn't stand it any longer. When I was a boy, I was rather like you are now.
Really?
I felt just like you do, probably. Only I was worse off. My parents were much stricter than yours are.
Oh, impossible.
Yes, they were. Just think of what my mother... Your grandmother is even now.
She's pretty awful, isn't she?
All of our set were like that in those days. It was understood that you were to have a good time in the next world, provided you were miserable in this one. Well, as I say, I couldn't stand it. First, I got a place with a firm in London, and after that, I went to Hamburg as their agent, and I've never regretted it. If I'd stayed at home, I dare say this place would have been too much for me, and I'd have given in to its influence like your father's done.
Oh, you think it's the place?
Certain of it. This Sunday morning brings it all back to me. Sunday school and chapel in the morning, and as likely as not the minister for dinner, and the roast beef and Yorkshire pudding completely spoiled for us boys because he persisted in examining us in points of theology during the meal. Sunday school again in the afternoon, chapel in the evening. We couldn't talk about things that interested us. We couldn't laugh. We couldn't run about. We couldn't read anything except the Bible. God, how well I remember it.
Thank goodness it isn't quite as bad as that now.
Oh, even here, the times have changed a little. Look here. You and I won't go to chapel this morning. We'll stay at home instead and have a long talk.
All right. Oh, you evidently don't know what a big thing you're asking me to do.
Why?
I've never stayed at home from chapel before, except when I've been ill.
Oh, of course, I was forgetting. Never mind, then.
No, I'll stay at home.
That a bargain?
Yes. I'm in a row already. I may as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb.
Good morning, Tom. Ah, had a good breakfast?
Splendid, thanks, Jim.
Arthur, I'm not going to speak to you now before chapel. There isn't time. I'll see you after dinner.
You are not to go out this afternoon, do you understand?
Yes, Father.
You may leave us now. Oh, Tom, I'd give £100 to know what to say to him.
Well, can't you overlook it?
How can I?
Let him off lightly, then.
Oh, you're a bachelor. You don't understand. You've got no children of your own. I have a duty to perform.
Arthur's only very young.
Yes, I know. That's why there's still a hope of reclaiming him.
Reclaiming him? Good Lord, Jim, you were young yourself once. Here, do you remember that night that you and I and Frank Hewitt got drunk at the Royal George? Do you remember us singing hymns outside Alderman McDougal's shop in the High Street until a policeman came up and tried to move us on? And have you forgotten that it was you who pushed the bobby through the Alderman's plate glass window? And surely you haven't forgotten how he chased us down High Street and along Kersley New Road, and how we climbed over Dr. Watson's wall and hid in the bushes until he'd gone by?
You may be sure I've never forgotten that night, Tom. It's one of the few things in my life I sincerely regret. It took place nearly 30 years ago, but I'm still ashamed of myself.
Rubbish.
I've often wanted to pay for that window. I never knew how to without giving myself away. I always blame Frank Hewitt for that night, you know. He led us astray. And look what a mess he made of his life afterwards.
Yes, poor chap.
But that was the only time, Tom. It was a lesson to me. I've never tasted alcohol since that night.
Perhaps this will be a lesson to Arthur, too.
I hope so.
Well, it's a good thing he doesn't know about Alderman McDougal's window, or it would rather spoil the effect of your sermon.
No one knows about it, except you.
Ah, Mother never got to hear about it, did she?
God gracious, no. I shouldn't like Mother to hear about it even now.
Oh, good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
You're nearly ready, James. The bells have started.
What bells?
The church bells.
But you go to chapel, not church.
There's no reason why we shouldn't use their bells, is there? There's a collection today, James, isn't there?
Yes.
Either of you got 2 threepenny bits for a sixpence?
No.
No.
I shall have to give sixpence, then.
That won't break you, will it?
No, but you see, James collects, and so he always puts a 5-shilling piece in the plate before he begins. I think that's quite enough for one family. Ah, here's Mother. In you come.
Good morning, Mother.
It's a long time since I had both my boys here on a Sunday morning.
Quite like old times, Mother.
You're very fortunate, Thomas. The Reverend Basil McNamara's preaching this morning.
Is he really?
A very powerful preacher.
I hope he doesn't preach very long sermons.
No, never more than 35 minutes. Ooh. Sermons aren't what they used to be.
Mother thinks we've changed for the worse, Tom. Oh,
I do indeed. By the way, James, I hear that man Roberts is to be made superintendent of the Sunday school. Is it true?
Surely not.
I believe so.
Well, I'm very much surprised.
Why, what's wrong with Mr. Roberts?
He's unfit for the position, I consider. He's not a gentleman.
Oh.
He's only a working carpenter.
It was a carpenter who was crucified, Mother.
Please don't be irreverent, Thomas. I'm afraid it's done you no good being in Germany. A place where the theatres are open on a Sunday.
Morning, Grandmama.
Where's Arthur, Reggie?
Oh, upstairs, I think. Arthur, Father wants you. I wish I could afford one of those safety razors.
You'd soon be able to afford one if you'd save your money instead of spending it foolishly. Ah, now. Arthur, aren't you ready?
I don't think I'll go to chapel this morning, Father. I'll stay at home with Uncle Tom.
Arthur.
Well, Thomas, tell the boy you're going to chapel.
I thought of staying at home.
You do no such thing, Thomas. Now you have come back, I expect you to take me to chapel.
Oh, very well, Mother.
I should think so. You can carry my Bible, Thomas. And Arthur?
I shall not be coming.
Aren't you well, Arthur?
Quite well, thank you, Mother.
Then what's all this about not going to chapel?
I don't feel inclined to go.
Don't feel inclined? What has that got to do with it? I don't go to chapel because I feel inclined to go.
Don't you? I always thought you did.
Do I understand that you refuse to go?
If you like to put it that way, yes.
Arthur, for the last time, are you coming?
No, Father.
I'll talk to you this afternoon, sir.
Bad for anyone who suffers from indigestion to be angry immediately after a heavy meal.
There's no need for him to be angry, Grace.
I think he'd have got over it by this time if he'd been left to himself. But I expect Grandmama's been rubbing in the moral.
Grandmama? Does she know?
I think so.
About last night?
Father and Mother were talking to her very earnestly after chapel. I couldn't manage to hear what they were saying, but I expect it was about that.
Oh, what on earth's he told her for? Oh,
goodness knows.
Hello. Waiting for the worst.
Aren't you going to Sunday school today?
No. I sent word I couldn't go because we'd got an uncle from abroad staying with us.
What an excuse.
Well, why aren't you at Sunday school?
Never mind. I have a much better reason than you.
Hmm. Not got over it yet, Arthur?
No.
My advice to you is to stick up to the old man. Don't let him do all the talking. After all, what is a bit of a blind occasionally? It does you good. Getting drunk takes you away from the sordid realities of everyday life, as Shakespeare says. I don't know how people stick it. Oh, by the way, I've finally decided. I shall go to New Zealand.
I wish you wouldn't talk such rot, Reggie.
Oh, Arthur feels just the same as I do, only I'm going to New Zealand and he went on the razzle. Oh, you tell Father that. Say I said so.
Shut up.
I'm only trying to help you. We ought to all stick together now.
I can manage all right alone, thank you.
I don't mean for your sake, I mean for ours. We're all in the same boat just now.
It's a good opportunity to make Father understand that we're not children any longer.
Father and Mother. She's as bad as he is.
Oh, Mother will do anything Father does.
Yes. She's one of the old school of females.
They're so unreasonable about little things.
They're out of date. That's what's the matter. Mm. And as for Grandmama, she's worse than out of date. She's what I call early Victorian.
I shall be 23 next month. And just think what girls of 23 do nowadays.
Yes. Lots of them have been in jail.
I shall tell Father that he's got to treat me differently.
So shall I. Bravo! Arthur, this is all owing to you. You raise the signal of revolt, and I honour you for it. If I'd thought about it, I'd have done it myself.
Silly young ass. You're serious about this, Grace?
Absolutely.
I think you're quite right.
By the way, was Clifford Rawson with you last night?
Oh, it's all right.
Don't be afraid to tell me. I don't mind if he was.
Oh, well, then, he was.
I thought so. Was he,
I don't know.
Don't know?
Well, I mean, I don't remember, but I don't think so. I had a particular reason for getting like I was, and he hadn't.
Never mind.
Well, don't say I gave him away.
It doesn't matter. I'm not angry.
Grace, I want to speak to Arthur alone.
Very well, Father.
Maggie has been to me to withdraw the notice she gave this morning. It appears you have already apologized to her.
Yes, I apologized to her in the kitchen while you were at chapel.
In the kitchen? Well, I must be content with that, as Maggie objects so strongly to a more public apology. Arthur, I have been thinking all this over. I'm not going to get into a rage and play the angry father, though heaven knows I might well be pardoned for doing so. But I try never to speak in anger, and I cannot forget that you are a man now. You are 21. I don't need to tell you that I was terribly shocked by that awful scene last night. Nor, what is worse, that you have thoroughly upset your mother and your grandmother.
Well, why did you tell Grandmama?
I didn't. It was your mother. I should have kept it from Grandmama, but she saw that something was wrong by your refusing to go to chapel, and she tackled your mother and got it out of her. Very well. That is the most painful result of your behavior. Then there is the effect upon Reggie. Reggie's character is not very strong, I'm afraid, and I'm deeply grieved that he should have seen you in that condition. I tremble to think what may be the consequences of such an example to a young and innocent boy. Then again, there is Mr. Leadbitter, Mr. Fowle. Think of it. You disgraced yourself and me before two gentlemen who have just honored me by showing their confidence in my principles and my good influence. It is quite possible they will not care to ask me to represent them now.
They are men of the world, Father.
Oh, men of the world. I hate that term. It is our duty to keep ourselves unspotted by the world. At any rate, I am not going to hold them to their invitation, if they already regret it. I met Mr. Leadbitter this morning and told him so.
What did he say?
Well, he told me not to worry my head about it. He told me that he would say nothing about the matter, and that he was sure as Mr. Fowle wouldn't.
Then that will be all right, Father.
Well, there's no thanks to you, sir, if it is. Now think how this undermines my self-respect. How am I to help to manage the affairs of a city when I can't keep my own son in order? And think how awkward it will be during the election if this gets about.
I'm very sorry, Father, but I don't think it will spoil your chances.
Sorry, sir, sorry. Are you nothing more than sorry?
But I've only mentioned the results of your behavior, how it affects other people. I want to talk to you about how it affects yourself. I want to point out to you the immorality, the licentiousness of your conduct.
There's no need to.
There is need to. All the more because I'm afraid you don't realize the seriousness of your offense. You're behaving too callously. What did you mean by refusing to go to chapel?
I didn't want to go.
People don't go because they want to. They go because it's their duty.
I can't see any use in going to a religious service unless you go willingly.
What do you know about it?
I'm quite old enough to decide for myself.
What do you think would be the result if everyone followed his personal inclinations without restraint?
Liberty.
Rubbish. Anarchy. You can't do exactly what you like in this world. You have to be bounded by certain conventions.
People have never been able to agree about these conventions, and they never will.
You're talking nonsense. You say you stayed at home this morning because you wanted to. Did you get drunk last night because you wanted to?
Yes, certainly.
What? You wanted to get drunk?
I did it deliberately.
Good heavens.
I got drunk as a symbol of revolt. I'm going my own way in future.
You are actually proposing to get drunk again?
Well, not very often, because you don't feel very well after it, but I shall if I want to. It has its advantages.
Perhaps you will be good enough to mention them.
But to begin with, it does away with Puritan ideas. Getting drunk knocks a Puritan off the pedestal.
But why should he be knocked off?
Because he's a human being like the people he's looking down on. Only God should stand on pedestals.
Arthur, I believe you're going mad.
Now, you're a Puritan, Father.
I am very proud to be called a Puritan.
But it's a mistake. It would do you a world of good to get drunk. It would, really. At present, you think you're perfect.
I know I'm very far from perfect. But I do what I can to show people the right way.
But how do you know that you know the right way? But then again, getting drunk is only one way of letting off surplus steam. Everyone has to let off his surplus steam.
I suppose that in your enthusiasm for drunkenness, you are prepared to defend the drinking habits of the working classes.
The working man is too poor to afford any other form of pleasure.
Pleasure?
Of course. It takes those poor beggars away from their awful surroundings for a few hours. It makes them forget that next week they may not have enough to feed their wives and children.
Well, no wonder if they spend their money in drink. But you and your friends, haven't even that excuse. You don't need to drug yourselves in order to forget your surroundings.
Yes, we do. We get fearfully depressed at times. But do you suppose that a young fellow with hot blood likes stuffing in a dreary office or warehouse 6 days a week? He wants to be doing something, not writing in ledgers and answering the telephone. I don't blame him for breaking out sometimes. Of course, he breaks out in different ways. There's Reggie, for instance, always wanting a man's life in Canada. That's one form of it. Getting drunk is another.
No.
I mean it, Father.
Now listen to me, Arthur, please. What do you want, Reggie?
Clifford Rawson's come.
Clifford Rawson? Where is he?
In the drawing room with Grace.
With Grace? How long has he been there?
Oh, I don't know.
Where's your mother? Go and find her. Tell her I want her. Well?
Grandmama's here.
Good afternoon, James.
Mother?
Well, Arthur, what have you to say?
Good afternoon, Grandmama.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself?
I have already spoken to Arthur, Mother.
All this is owing to your mistaken leniency. You don't know how to manage a son.
I ought to know. I had the advantage of your training.
Yes. You were more fortunate in your parents than Arthur is.
Grace?
Yes.
I should like to kiss you.
I dare say.
You'd rather I didn't.
It's a matter of indifference to me.
How can it be?
Well, it is, I assure you.
I can kiss you or not, just as I please.
Yes.
Then I won't bother.
You cad.
Grace, I am going to marry you. There are going to be no more letters. From now on, it's going to be a matter of fact between us that I'm going to marry you.
I thought that it already was a matter of fact between us.
I mean between your father and me. Yes, I'm not afraid of him. On the contrary. He's probably not such a bad chap when you get to know him. And anyway, it would be like gaining a son.
He already has two.
Oh, Grace, you are not helping. You are not helping at all. What have I done?
That's what I would like to know. Were you with Arthur last night?
Ah, as he said I was.
Are you going to tell my father that you intend to marry me today?
Yes, certainly. Today. What has that to do with whether I was with Arthur last night?
He came home and kissed the maid. He broke three vases and then he fell down on the carpet and snored.
That wasn't my fault.
What's the name of your mother's maid?
Connie. But what's that? Grace.
Grace Connie is practically as old as Mother. But you don't think...
If there's going to be emancipation in the air, some of it must touch me. If you want to be free in the new way, that's good, and I admire it in you. But you will not be free and foolish. There'll be no cuddling in the hall.
Never.
Never is a huge word. But there will be as little as possible, which is to say none at all. We're not going to make the mistakes our parents made. We're going to be free.
That's exactly what I came to tell you.
You can kiss me now, Clifford, if you'd like to.
Grace. What was that? I thought I heard footsteps.
We are going to be free, Clifford.
Grace?
Good afternoon, Mrs. Kenyon.
Oh, good afternoon to you.
Mrs. Kenyon, I...
Yes?
Mother, Clifford and I are going to be married.
When?
Quite soon. Don't frown, Mother.
Oh, was I frowning?
I shall take good care of her. I can promise that.
Well, that's very kind of you, Clifford. I really don't know what to say.
You could say you're happy.
Oh, Grace. Oh, Grace, I am happy. I'm very happy. In fact, I'm delighted, Clifford. I really am delighted.
Well, that settles everything.
Well, not quite. There's Father.
Yes. Perhaps later.
No, now. Don't you think?
Yes, we do.
I'll prepare the way. You must be patient.
Grace, she likes me.
Of course she does. And so will Father.
You really think so?
Well, it's possible.
James, you will have to take a stand with the boys.
James, Clifford Rawson is in the drawing room with Grace.
I shall have to go and see him. Will you come with me or not?
He's coming to you. What are you going to say to him?
I'm not quite certain.
That was always your great fault, James. You never could make up your mind.
I'd like to try and be fair, Mother, and see both sides of a question.
Well, it's best to see only one side if you wish to get your own way. But I see you cannot even control which room your family decides to congregate in. Well, here's an avalanche of Kenyons. Come in, come in. Disregard your grandmother.
Clifford and I want your consent to our engagement, Father.
Oh, Grace, this is really too bad of you, really.
What is?
Taking us by surprise like this. Good afternoon, Clifford.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Hannah.
That is our Uncle Tom.
How do you do?
Pleased to meet you. Now, was there any need for this hurry, Clifford?
It's not my fault, Mr. Kenyon. Grace insisted on coming in and asking you at once.
Upon my word, I don't know what girls are coming to.
It really is most embarrassing, Grace.
Perhaps I'd better withdraw.
Certainly not, Uncle Tom. Clifford doesn't mind. Do you, Clifford?
No, I suppose not. I want Mr. Kenyon to say yes, that's all.
Before I can say yes, there are certain questions that I should like you to answer.
I'm sure I'd better clear out. Come along, Mother. We'll evade the avalanche.
Certainly not. I shall stop here.
Very well. Where were you last night, Clifford?
Last night?
Yes. Were you with Arthur? Come?
Yes. I was with Arthur.
Ah, I'm glad you haven't told me a lie, at any rate.
You see, I wasn't certain whether you knew or not.
You admit you were with Arthur last night. That admission makes it easier for me to give you an answer at once. I haven't sufficient confidence in you to allow Grace to become engaged to you.
But why?
I'm sorry. I don't think you are steady.
Well, what reason have you for thinking that?
You are a friend of Arthur's, for one thing.
What? I'm not fit to marry your daughter because I'm a friend of your son.
Arthur came home disgracefully drunk last night.
He's never done such a thing before.
How do I know that is true?
Oh, ask any of the fellows. Why? He doesn't care for beer, and he positively hates whiskey. He got drunk last night quite by accident.
He told me he did it on purpose as a symbol of revolt.
No. It was an accident.
I don't see what all this has got to do with Grace's engagement.
Here's Mr. Kenyon objecting to me because of your disgraceful behaviour. I'm only telling him that you're not so bad as he thinks you are.
Just mind your own business, please, Clifford.
It is my business. Look here, sir. Arthur and I and some of the fellows went into the Royal George smoke room last night for a drink. Arthur was talking about the way you were always nagging at him and asking him where he's been, and he said he wasn't going to stand for it any longer. Well, we sympathised with him, of course, and advised him to have it out with you. Well, he said he would if he could only make up his mind, and he was a bit afraid of tackling you. We advised him to have a whiskey and soda to buck him up. He had a couple, but still funked it. You see, the idea was to screw his courage up to sticking point, so we persuaded him to go on with the whiskey and soda. Well, unfortunately, he isn't accustomed to drinking spirits, and we made a mistake and screwed him up too far. In fact, he got completely screwed.
You're a low cad to give a fellow away like this, Clifford.
Arthur, I thought you got drunk as a protest, a symbol of revolt.
Well, I know I said I did. I thought I might as well make the best of it after it happened.
I am very glad to find that you've not been as bad as I feared. Now, Clifford, I like you. I always have liked you. But you haven't the strength of character that I should wish to see in the man who is to marry Grace.
Father, I don't at all insist on strength of character in my husband.
I do, my dear.
Well, you won't have to live with him. If I've got to live with a man all my life, he ought to be someone I like, not someone you like.
I wish you wouldn't put it like that, Grace. And let me try and make you see this in a reasonable light.
Now you're giving in to them, James.
I am not going to give in to them, Mother.
Then it's really no use continuing the conversation.
Oh, Grace, do listen to your father. He means well.
Girls didn't behave like this when I was young.
I hope you are not going to be stubborn, Grace, and upset your mother. We have had enough worry with the three of you. You and Arthur and Reggie.
There. Now I'm to be dragged into this, I suppose. I'm sure I've not done anything very serious.
You told me a lie.
Oh, you've got to tell a good many fibs before you die.
It is not a matter of telling fibs, sir. You have all three told me downright, elaborate, calculated lies. If there is one thing I object to, it is a lie.
I don't know how you get on in business if you never tell one.
I prefer to tell the truth, even if I lose money by it. Now, Grace, are you going to be reasonable?
I want to marry Clifford.
No.
But give me your reasons.
I have given them.
You said something about strength of character.
If you wish me to put it plainly, I'm afraid you drink.
I don't.
Have you ever been drunk?
Once or twice.
Very well, then. What did I say?
Well, getting tight once or twice isn't the same as drinking.
If there is a difference, it is not worth discussing.
But you must know that every fellow gets drunk sometime or other.
I hope not, for the sake of this country. The man who has once been drunk is never to be relied on. He may break out at any time.
Father, you're so unreasonable. You must have been young once. Have you never been drunk yourself?
Oh, Arthur.
What did you say?
Have you never been drunk yourself?
This is the new-fashioned way of bringing up your children, James. My children never put such a question to me.
Arthur, how can you ask your father such a thing?
I notice he hasn't answered me.
What's that?
I say you haven't answered me.
It isn't necessary for your father to answer such a question.
Why not?
Keep out of this, Tom.
Not at all. It's very necessary. If you refuse to answer, Arthur and the others would be justified in putting the worst construction on your refusal.
Very well. I have never been drunk in my life.
I should think not. I brought up my boy strict teetotalers. I don't know what habits you've contracted in that dissolute Germany, Thomas, but I feel sure James at least has never touched a drop of intoxicating liquor. Have you, James?
No, Mother.
What? Never?
You don't suppose that your father would tell you a lie, do you, Arthur? You wouldn't lie to your children, would you, James?
I'm sorry to interrupt this discussion, but it really doesn't interest me. I want to be engaged to Grace, and I don't mind at all whether Mr. Kenyon was ever drunk or not. I shouldn't let that affect our engagement in the least.
Young man, I'll give you your answer. Our family has always been a strict, upright, God-fearing family. My grandfather was a disciple and friend of John Wesley himself. We've always tried to keep up the tradition in the family. Some of the younger members have fallen away, sadly, of late. But I blame their father, my son James, for that. They say he's been too harsh with them. I say that he's not been harsh enough. There's original sin in every young man and young woman, and it's got to be stamped out of them. Yes, scourged out of them with whips, and burned out of them with fire if need be. James has been to blame in that respect, but it can't be helped now. It's too late. But it's not too late to refuse to admit you into the family. There's no need to let Grace marry a light-minded and vicious man when she might marry a God-fearing man who goes to the chapel.
Grandmama.
If I had my way, I'd put her under lock and key if she refused to obey her parents, just as I'd turn my son out of doors if he came home drunk.
We are in the 20th century now.
Thank God I shall not live to see the 21st.
Mother, I can't bear to hear you say such things. I know my children have been very wrong and sinful, but I can't forget that they're very young. They'll be less hasty when they're older, and they'll think more about what they're doing. James couldn't dream of doing what you suggest, Mother, and if he did, I wouldn't let him.
You're not of my generation. You're of a younger, softer generation.
I'm thankful I am. Your generation's too hard for me.
That's not what I want to hear.
I despair of ever saying what you want to hear. The world's
wider, more generous than it is within the walls of the chapel. It's the chapel and its special rectitude that has made you think as you do.
I see. And am I to be insulted by you as well as everyone else? Watched by my own sons?
Alice does not wish to insult you, Mother, but you ask too much of people. You far too much. I can see that. I say nothing about the chapel as such.
More chapel and less talk would cure all ills here.
I think not. That's no better than hiding. I don't want my children to hide from life.
Sin should hide itself.
Have they sinned so very badly? They're young, that's all. And we're all growing older, all of us.
Well said, Alice. She's right, you know, Mother.
I believe all wrong will be punished.
And you're probably right. It hardly bears thinking about, though, does it? I mean, we're all at fault, aren't we?
Yes, you are.
I meant all of us, Mother.
Let me speak, Tom. You're a good-hearted woman, Mother, but you're too harsh for my children. They represent something you can't understand, and I confess I hardly understand them myself. But I do recognize they're who they are and cannot change.
They must change.
I don't believe they can. I believe they're sincere and decent, and that it may be us who are at fault.
Well said, Alice. James, you should stand up for her.
He has some principle left. He cannot.
What is it, Maggie? Oh, Mr. Fell sent this note across, Miss, for the master. There's no answer needed.
Father, here's a letter from Mr. Fell.
Oh, thank you.
Look, this is no business of mine, I know, but perhaps you won't think it impertinent if I say a few words. To begin with, I'm afraid we can't adopt your suggestions, Mother.
You never would take my advice, Thomas.
No, I would not. Now, this is my proposal. Consent to an engagement between Grace and Clifford. Let them see each other freely, for a year at least. Only, let Clifford understand that he's on probation, that he's got to behave himself.
Oh, I promise that.
Yes, I think you may. Makes a wonderful difference to a fellow when he has an object in life. As for Arthur, if you'll allow me, Jim, I'll take him back with me to Hamburg and find him plenty of work to do. Will you come, Arthur?
Rather.
Oh, yes. That's what you want, to get away from the restraint of home life.
Why not? It'll do him good. Home life is not an unmixed blessing. Now, Jim, what do you say?
Clifford? Grace? I think we had better do what Uncle Tom suggests.
Dear Father.
But thank you, sir.
Mind, you must deal honorably with me.
I will.
And if you'd like to take Arthur for a year or so, Tom, I think it would be a good idea.
Thank you, Father.
Then that's all right.
I'm so glad we're not going to have any difficulty. I'm sure it's all for the best, if James says so.
Of course. What was in your letter, James? The letter from Fowle?
It says, don't be a fool. You've got to stand for the council. You are an honorable man. With a clean record, and they're not so easy to find nowadays. Ledbetter and I won't breathe a word about high old times on Saturday night, if that's what you're afraid of.
That's not all, Father.
That is all that matters.
Oh, listen to this. I rather admire Arthur. He is a young sport. I didn't think he had it in him.
There was no need to read that, Grace.
And you'll stand for the council?
Yes.
I hope you'll get in, Father. You deserve to. Clifford, there's a fire in the drawing room. Come along.
You'll stay to tea, Clifford.
Thanks very much.
Ah, good. I'm off early tomorrow morning, Arthur. If you're coming with me, you'll have to pack up tonight.
I'll begin now. Will you come and help me, Mother?
Yes, dear, in a little while.
Look here, what about me?
Well, what about you, Reggie?
Well, you've fixed up Arthur and Grace, all right. It's my turn now. I'm going out to Canada.
Don't be silly, dear.
I've made up my mind. I shall go out and join Tommy Leslie. All I want is £100 for my outfit and to give me a start over there.
And where are you going to get your £100?
I want you to lend it to me.
Do you? You will have to want a long time.
It's jolly mean of you. Uncle Tom, will you lend me £100?
Well, I'm afraid I haven't got it about me just at present.
Well, you've no need to make fun of me anyway. You don't sympathize with me, that's what it is. You don't know what it is to want to live a man's life. Wait until I'm 21. I'll show you.
Are you going, Mother?
Yes.
Won't you stay to tea?
No, I will not stay to tea. You've given in to them, James. I wouldn't have given in to them. You say nothing.
There is nothing to say.
Very well.
I'll see you out.
Oh, Tom. I told a lie.
Yes. Pretty big one, too.
Good God, what I'd just been saying about telling the truth. But what could I do? Could I have told them about getting drunk and breaking Alderman McDoodle's window and being chased by a policeman?
Well, of course you could have told them.
Reggie, Arthur, Grace, and Mother, too. What would she have thought about
it? Oh, it might have done her good.
Oh, you don't believe that.
Look, James, I think you did right to lie to us all. You did what you thought you had to for the best, for everybody's sake. It happened to be a lie, but you were right. It saved Mother's feelings. It preserved your authority with your children and your wife. You could have told the truth.
Never. Never, Tom.
Then perhaps the next time, eh? That lie's done you good, Jim. Knocked you off your pedestal a bit.
That's exactly the expression Arthur used earlier.
He's a good boy. They're all good children, but they're young, James. It's a younger generation. You must make allowances. Give them the credit for being right occasionally.
What will they think of us, our children?
What will their children think of them? The world's getting younger all the time, you old sinner.
You're not going out, Tom.
Yes, I'm going to follow along after Mother. She's a bit put out by it all. She must fire off her ammunition at me. Ah, Alice, come in and comfort your husband. Tell Arthur I'll be back in a while.
James, are we so very wrong?
We are no longer young, my dear. It is, it appears, time for the new generation.
In Brian Thompson's adaptation of The Younger Generation by Stanley Horton, the cast was as follows. James Kenyon, John Franklin Robbins. Alice Kenyon, Daphne Oxenford. Tom, David Marlowe. Arthur, Peter Ivers. Grace, Jenny Austin. Reggie, Barry Smith. Mrs. Hannah, Barbara Mullaney. Maggie, Elizabeth Paget. Clifford, Malcolm Storey. Fowl, Roy Barraclough. And Leadbitter, Bruce Jeffrey. The play was produced in Leeds by Tony Cliff.